Who win it now? Who win it now? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Source Material. This episode, I welcome on a returning guest, someone we haven't had on here for over a year, and it has been far too long. Dean Compton of TheUnspokenDecade.com joins me as we celebrate the 20-year anniversary of a comics event that was a rarity in its time, and may even be more rare as time goes by. DC vs. Marvel hit the stands early in 1996 and pitted heroes of the big two companies against each other. To say this event was unlike any other before and to come after is not hyperbole, folks. So join us as we discussed just what went into this brawl to end it all and our takes on the outcomes of each battle. Language warning. You are hereby advised that explicit language does appear in this episode, so make sure you have the earbuds in or are able to safely listen without offending others. Spoiler warning. Dean and I discuss this book at length and spoil each and every single battle, so be prepared. If you'd rather read before listening, we understand. We'll be right here when you get back, or go grab a copy and follow along. Now don't forget, you can find Source Material on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Also, go give the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like and stay up on top of all the great podcasts our network has to offer. If you'd like to follow me, you can do so on Twitter at Stiznarchy, and you can also follow the show at SourceMatCast. Okay, ladies and gents, when I say this, I mean it. It's epic crossover time. Let's get to it. All right, man. Well, let's go ahead. We'll talk a little bit about DC versus Marvel, and this is a four-issue set. I don't know if I've ever asked you in the past. I've had you on here once before. We talked greatest 90s comic characters.
You got it.
It came out of the 90s. I can't remember. Did I ask you were you, let's just go ahead and get this right out of the way. Were you Marvel or DC guy back in the 90s?
I'm a Marvel guy through and through. I think that my earliest encounters with superheroes were almost certainly DC superheroes. I remember, like, when I was 4 years old at my birthday party, we had DC superheroes wrapping paper, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, the big Trinity hanging out on there.
Yeah.
But the thing that really first got me into comic books and into superheroes, like, big time, besides the Super Friends show, which I remember a little, but, like, it was just kind of on after Scooby-Doo, and it's so similar to Scooby-Doo, it's almost not worth talking about in the vein of superheroes. But, like, it was the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And I think that came out in, like, 81, and I was born in 79. I think it ran to, like, 83 or 84. So right when I'm 3 and 4, it's this amazing world. And one of the first ones I saw had the Hulk on it. Ooh. And so from then on, I was a Marvel guy. My first superhero toys were Marvel Secret Wars toys. I had Magneto, Kang, Captain America, Doctor Doom, Doctor Octopus, and the Amazing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And so, and my favorite character of all time is the Punisher. So I'm a Marvel guy. I've always thought that those characters were just, I don't want to say better, because that's not the right answer. I love DC as well, and I love a lot of those characters. But there's something that's inherently more relatable to the Marvel characters in the Marvel universe to me that I don't know that I could articulate, but it just exists to me. Perhaps it's because Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Green Lantern are so iconic, you almost can't relate. I almost couldn't relate to them. But, mm-hmm, like, I could always feel like, you know, like, me and Peter Parker, we're guys, you know, we can hang out. Like, I can hang out with Johnny Storm. I could even pick old Reed Richards' brain. I don't know that I could talk to, you know, Clark Kent even. It, uh-huh, just feels like too big of a world. It would be like, you know, it'd almost be like trying to talk to, you know, God or something like that. So this is just completely beyond your ken. That having been said, there are lots of great DC stories and characters. Again, I'm not trying to come across like I'm taking a shit on it. If you like DC better, I don't think you're wrong. But for me, it's like Stan said from the beginning, make mine Marvel.
We, as comic book fans, fans of the genre growing up as little kids, one of our biggest things that we didn't see too often, if at all, was DC Comics superheroes mingling it with Marvel Comics superheroes. So there was always that debate that so-and-so could whip so-and-so. I think it was 1978. I could be wrong on this. I know it was late 70s. We got our first DC Marvel superhero crossover, which was a comic book I actually covered on here with Benjamin J. Cologne, who hopped in on and talked about it with me. Superman versus Spider-Man.
Right.
So we got to see something. Something happened way back then, and it was considered probably, you know, epic. We got to see the two faces of each company kind of square off. And of course, it wasn't a battle to the death or anything like that. It was more they battled as superheroes sometimes do, and then shake hands and they go after the villain.
I was going to say Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man, just to get it totally right. It's 1976.
76.
And I think one of the things that really contributed as well to that larger than life feeling that it had, not just was just the two most iconic superheroes in history. It's hard to really, maybe Batman's bigger than one of them, but for argument's sake, let's say certainly the most iconic in each of their companies. They were going to go at it, but it was going to be also in Treasury format, that oversized.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
So like it was literally bigger than any comic book that I think most people had ever seen at that time.
That's the truth. Shout out to my boy, Golden Age Dave. We became real good friends in college. One of the guys that got me into comic book auctions and going to auctions and getting stuff. He picked that up for $2 at an auction because the cover was detached, and he gave it to me, and it is hanging on my wall in my bedroom as we speak. My wife actually framed it. Don't think I went out and spent a whole lot of money on a frame or something like that, but we put it in some kind of frame than another picture. It's like, take that picture out and put that comic in. Fit perfect. I covered it on here. Of course, I had it digitally, and then he was nice enough to actually pick it up for me in physical form. Tremendous, tremendous fun read.
It's a must read if you ask me.
But so we get that, and then I think we see a few filter in here and there as time goes on. I think Batman fights the Hulk at one time, and there's
we get another Superman, Spider-Man.
That's right. And what
X-Men Titans as well.
Oh yes, and I think I may have said that on my show in the past. That was one of the first ever DC Marvel crossovers that I actually picked up. I remember as a kid reading it, not knowing a whole lot. As to what was going on in either one of these universes. I'm like, what the hell? I didn't know anything about Darkseid. I didn't know much about the X-Men. So it was still a fun read, but I have it still up there in the long box. We didn't get a whole lot of that. And of course, there was always the debate amongst your school friends, who could beat who from each company. We just didn't see enough of it to actually be satisfied. And we didn't have really much of a voice into who could beat who, because even though we might be able to see these heroes fight against each other, it was up to whoever wrote the book as to determine who the winner was. And we still had to worry about our feelings maybe getting hurt, or, you know, we may not be satisfied with the way the story went.
So yeah, I think another thing too is like in the 90s, it became a big deal to have crossovers where like each company would put out one. You'd have Batman Spawn and Spawn Batman. Mm-hmm. So even if there was a fight, you could almost count on, if there was, you know, a Batman Magnus Robot Fighter, and then there was Magnus Robot Fighter Batman. Well, in Batman Magnus Robot Fighter, which doesn't exist, folks. I know it doesn't. It's a
thing. People are looking right now.
I know. They're like, oh my God, how did I miss this? Is it an ash can? Did it come with Hero Illustrated? But if in Batman Magnus, we would assume that, you know, it'd be published by DC, so Batman would win if they fought. If there had been Magnus Robot Fighter Batman as well from Valiant, Magnus probably would have won that fight. So I think in the 90s, there was this era of greater cooperation. But as far as answering the questions between your buddies, like, can Batman really beat Daredevil? You were just going to get two versions of it. So no question would really be answered. The answer would be, well, whichever company is in charge, they're going to let their guy win.
Now, 1996 comes along. And now, Dean, I know this is obviously your realm of expertise. We've got the unspoken decade. You focus on 1990s comics. And
that's all we do.
That's all you do. By the way, folks, we're going to plug it at the end, but I want you to understand that if you haven't had the chance to follow the Unspoken Decade on Facebook, I would suggest you do so. There's a lot of entertainment there.
Well, thank you.
1996 hits, and now I know this is in this is in production, I'm sure, prior to 96 hitting, because I know you shared, it was a ballot. We're going to get to that here in a few seconds, but you shared a ballot form, I think, or maybe it was a promotional thing, but it was the brawl to end it all, where you had the opportunity to vote as to who would be the winner between some DC and Marvel superheroes. So I assume they were saying something about February of 1996 or something like that on that ballot form. So I'm sure it was getting, the wheels were probably turning in 1995 at some point, maybe even earlier than that.
Almost certainly earlier. The 90s are an era of unprecedented and unparalleled cooperation between DC Comics and Marvel Comics that we had never seen before and we may never see again. In fact, obviously there's no guarantees in the world, but I personally, if you ask my opinion, I don't think they'll ever work together again for lots of reasons.
That's so sad.
But even before DC versus Marvel, we'd already had Punisher Batman and Batman Punisher. I believe we'd already had Spider-Man Punisher at this point. I think that we may have even had Fantastic Four Superman. I can't remember the dates on it. But they had been cooperating a little bit prior to this. I think that maybe once they got, I can't say for certain, and this is something that we'll look into over at theunspokendecade.com because we cover the comics, but we try and look into the history of the 90s too. But I'm sure once they got one or two deep into these crossovers that they had started doing, which these are the first crossovers in like 10 years that these two companies had done, because there's a lot of bad blood over JLA Avengers. We won't get into that here. You can look it up anywhere. Jim Shooter, George Perez, everybody knows it. But if you don't know it, look it up. Mm-hmm. But they got it back together, and I think that you combine the fact that there was such a great atmosphere of cooperation between the companies, and you combine that with the death of the market. Because what's going on in 96? What's going on in 97? What's going on in 95? The market is shrinking faster than a slug that you done covered with salt on your porch in negative 10 degree weather. It's going to shrivel up real fast.
Okay? Yeah.
That's how fast this market was going. Everybody was kind of rushing out. You know, there were a lot of, obviously a lot of gimmick covers, a lot of variant covers. But I think the last well that they could really dip into was our guys have never just gone head to head. And I think that, and again, this is a lot of conjecture. So if somebody knows better, please feel free to correct me. I would think that several of the honchos at Marvel and DC, even if maybe some people in the upper echelons of the corporate structure didn't see it, they could see that the market was going to contract. But the problem with the corporate structure is they don't believe it. Like, oh, we were getting these sales last year, Johnson. Bring them back up. You don't get a bonus if you don't, or whatever. That's my go-to boss voice, apparently. Apparently that's what that is. But they were like, here's a last-ditch effort. We can tell a story that's never been told, and we can also, you know, pop sales maybe one last time. And I think the only real sales pop we get after Marvel versus DC is going to be Heroes Reborn, done by Liefeld and Lee. So I think that's the combination. That it's a combination of a lot of events that led to these things coming out and led to people being like, hey, on top of, like, you know, dipping into this well and getting this sweet, valuable water that you can sell for $1 million a drop or whatever, because we've never done it before. Let's get the fans involved too. And that will pop the sales even more. And maybe it would also take some of the pressure off the story.
Yeah. It almost feels, I don't want to say last ditch effort, but I mean, it definitely feels like something like, hey, we got to bring some attention back in.
Right.
You know, we got to get people's eyes on our stuff. 96, I could tell you that I'm just getting ready to graduate high school, head to college. Unfortunately, when 96 hit, or when college hit, that was when I took a backseat to collecting, mainly because I certainly wasn't getting an allowance anymore.
There you go.
You know what?
College is like Gandhi. You know, they used to say, you know, the people around Gandhi used to say, it takes a lot of money to keep him this poor. It takes a lot of money to be that poor in college. I don't know. It does.
It does, dude. So I got out of it, and I knew this was coming, and I really wanted my hands on these issues. But I can tell you that I never got a chance to read this probably until, I'd say maybe shortly after I got married. So maybe 2000 sometime. So I didn't have the chance to get in there and read this until well after it was done.
Yeah.
And I remember maybe checking on the results, hopping on my AOL account or something.
The old modem noise.
Yeah.
Dialing up. For me, our comic book store had closed down. So it was, and I lived 5,327 miles from nowhere in the middle of Arkansas. And so it was literally a good 90 minutes, 2 hours in the nearest comic book shop. Now, thankfully, this was also about the same time that Walmart and Kroger stopped selling comics on the newsstand. So we literally in our town had no way to get anything but Wizard. Fucking no comic books, but goddamn, Wizard's still there in Kroger. You can still buy this magazine about comics that you can't buy. But somehow a friend of mine, and I was 1996, I would have been sophomore, junior in high school. 98 was my graduation year. So this would have come out when I was a sophomore, I guess. And I remember a pal of mine who was older, he's in his 20s. He drove the 2 hours to like get it, and he got it. And I read it maybe within a month and a half, two months after it coming out. So I have a distinct fresh impression of it. And I also have the impression of it as the years have gone on, because this is something I probably read, I don't know, once every 2 or 3 years, not because it's a great story or the greatest crossover ever, but just because this is such a huge event. And as I said, it's unprecedented, and it will probably also go unrepeated.
Creators. I wanted to talk about the creators real quick. Give them a short little blurb here, because I don't want them to go unnoticed. The series was written by Ron Mars and Peter David, two very familiar names.
Ron Mars, the man who killed Hal Jordan. How dare he? How dare he? We'll get an ad in Wizard Magazine. We'll take care of this. That's true, people, by the way. If you don't know, a group called Heat did actually take out an ad in Wizard Magazine to bring back Hal Jordan because they were mad that Ron Mars had killed
him.
I didn't mean to interrupt with the creators. These guys did a great job, but I had to get that in.
No, I did not know that. Very interesting. I'll have to remember that. I got a couple guys that come on the cast every once in a while that are Green Lantern fans. I'll have to ask them, see if they remember that. I'm sure they'll
remember.
They have to. Peter David, who I remember fondly as one of the, I think he was a good writer on the Hulk, wasn't he? He was writing the Hulk around then.
Yeah, he wrote the Hulk for like 10 years. I mean, at some point it seems like he's written everything, but I think the thing he's most known for is the Hulk. And he had a really good run on X-Factor. He's a solid, a solid writer. He's the kind of guy you can bring in for something like this, because he can make those little quips that he's kind of associated with. He can make them, and they can come at the expense of everybody, not necessarily any one character. And the guy was writing in both universes at the time. And I think Ron Mars was too. Ron Mars had been doing Silver Surfer and had been doing Green Lantern. Peter David was doing Hulk, and he was doing Aquaman, and he was doing Supergirl. One more thing about Ron Mars. He's a big Mets fan. I follow him on Twitter. My Royals beat your Mets, bro. If you listen to this, I just want you to know, congratulations on losing to the Royals in the World Series.
It's a needle it in there.
Yeah. Good writer, though, and a great guy. Great guy to follow on Twitter. But that's probably part of the reason why these writers in particular were chosen, is that they needed guys who were working in both universes at the time, or at least had some recent familiarity with them. And in fact, to tie this back, Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man back in 76, that's why Jerry Conway was chosen. He was one of the only guys, if not the only guy, who had ever written both characters.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now we got art by Dan Jurgens, which is another name that I remember clearly from the 90s.
The man who killed Superman.
Yes, sir.
Everybody on this like killed somebody. What's that? Morbid.
And Claudio Claudio Castellini, which is somebody. Now, I think I remember that reading here in the foreword in this graphic novel, they talked a little bit about what he had done. But honestly, off the top of my head, I don't recognize that name at all. Is that somebody that you recognize doing anything very significant back in the day?
You know, this is what I know him for. He probably has done something else that's escaping me at the moment.
But this is it, huh?
But for me, like, this is it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, the guy who out of nowhere drew the DC versus Marvel, he's really good. Don't get me wrong. And I'm trying to find out to see if he ever did, anything else that I'm super familiar with. It doesn't appear so. A lot of work at Marvel. But I think this is probably the biggest thing he ever did. Work at Dark Horse. But this is probably his magnum opus, if you will. And he does a great job. The art in this is, if there are any problems with the book, The art's not it. The art always looks good. Dan Jurgens' stuff always looks good. Everything in this pops. It probably seems a little dated. It's definitely in the 90s style, which I still love. Somebody, you know, somebody who's a little more persnickety about how their comic books look and is just inclined to just hate 90s looking stuff might dislike this. But I thought the art really captured the scope of the event. Things really felt big even when they were small. If that makes sense. Like, like some of the small stuff, like Robin and Jubilee doing their thing or whatever, it still looked big, even though it was human interest stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there is a buddy of ours, somebody that chimed in on a message there talking about a few things that he wanted us to hit on. And we kind of hit on a few of them already. Was there trading cards for this?
Yeah, there it had its own trading card line, actually. And and Amalgam had its own trading card line as well. Just for the Amalgam characters that are spawned out of this event. But yeah, I only ever bought like two packs of it. Again, this was at a time when comic books and comic book related material was just at a dearth in the area that I lived. But I remember getting the Punisher versus Deathstroke card, which was the only fucking card I'd super wanted. It's the only one with the Punisher in it. My guy, the Punisher, he's in it for like one panel.
I know,
one card. Because this is not a good time for old Frank Castle. But I remember getting that card, and it just talked about their battle. And I wish I had them all, because I would surmise that there's extra information on them that we don't get in the four-issue series.
You're probably right.
I know for a fact there was on the Deathstroke versus Punisher, because it was like, you know, and they were like, these guys, they don't like each other. They've got guns. You know? Which more or less it. That's more or less what it fucking said. But I bet there's some extra tidbits there. One day I'll pick it up. You know, it's not like it's super expensive. But my man Emily, my co-host on Her Dork World, His Dork World, also my girlfriend, we done been buying all the pops they make, so we got no money for 20-year-old cards right now.
I hear you, dude. I don't remember the trading cards for this. I do remember the Amalgam stuff, though. I remember the Amalgam trading cards you're talking about. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get a little bit into the plot here, because the plot is plots. It's kind of, I want to say basic, but I mean, we got two huge companies, the largest companies putting together some of the greatest comic book history that our world has ever seen. When I say that, that's not an overstatement. That is a fact.
No, it's true. You're right.
You know, these guys got to come together and put DC versus Marvel, Marvel versus DC on paper. They got to come up with a plot. And what we kind of get out of this is a cosmic. We're very familiar with any Marvel cosmic that I am, that I've read, or any DC cosmic. You get that. It's got to have that feel. So we got two brothers. One represents the DC universe. One represents the Marvel universe. And they find, they basically find each other out. And their idea is to figure out which one has the better universe. So, hence, they pit champions from each universe against each other. They also kind of merge the two worlds together. Now, when I say that, I'm not talking about Amalgam here. I'm talking about they actually merge the two worlds to where now everybody's on the same planet.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to note that in all the Marvel DC crossovers that existed prior, with the possible exception of Silver Surfer, Green Lantern, which I think may have murked this up a little bit, but in the original ones, the first two Spider-Man, Supermans, the Batman Hulk, Titans X-Men, Batman Punisher, Spider-Man Batman, it was just assumed they all lived in the same universe anyway.
Yes.
It was all just assumed that they were in the same place. So for me to bring these brothers in on this cosmic level is, you know, it's just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know what I mean? Like, like you're saying, it's already complicated to talk about because they merge universes that were already merged, mind you. Mm-hmm. But then we have to say that while also saying, but we're not talking about Amalgam when the characters of the worlds also get merged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it just seems like a problem you didn't have to have. And in fact, I always thought it was neater to think about the fact that these guys just knew each other. We just didn't get to see them hang out all too often. And that makes sense. Look at Superman. The fuck does he need Captain America showing up in Metropolis?
That's right.
I mean, Superman.
That's right. I can understand, obviously, the brothers serve as a plot device to pit these heroes against each other and say, okay, hey, look, you have to fight so-and-so,
right,
and you have to fight so-and-so, and you guys, the winner of those battles. Now, the thing is, I want you guys to understand, is that it's not to the death. really, the only thing you have to do is incapacitate.
It's like amateur wrestling rules for superheroes.
There you go. There you go. You got to incapacitate.
You get a one count, you win.
You got to incapacitate the guy to where he cannot move, or he's either unconscious or, just like you said, it's a one count. And we're going to talk. I mean, there's some pretty lame incapacitation as we go through here.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I feel really bad for the creators who had to satisfy all of the suits. And I'm not just talking about, when I say all the suits, I'm not just talking about the editors. And the editors and the editors-in-chief and the publishers, they were probably persnickety enough. But when it comes to actually bringing over some other company, in particular, your biggest competitor and the other big, you know, titan in your industry, when it comes to bringing their intellectual property over, now the lawyers get involved.
Oh, dude. Legal had to have been a fucking nightmare, man.
Yeah. You can only imagine how that was. So I don't know the numbers. Again, I'm not trying to sit here and say that I know exactly what happened. But I think some of the reason that some of these fights went down kind of in a lackluster fashion, and I think and the reason I think they went with the brothers and stuff is they had to literally satisfy, you know, let's say 25 to 35, 40 people in suits at a big table. And at any point, if any of them objected, they had to start all fucking over. That's how I surmise it would go. Again, if somebody knows better, I'm interested to hear the real story. That's how it would seem based on, and I've worked for three of the largest media companies in the world. That's the way it's worked in my media sectors.
So
I would assume it. In fact, I used to work for Warner Brothers. I worked for Turner. That's the way it was at Warner Brothers. I would assume that if Time Warner was messing around with, I said Warner Brothers, I meant Time Warner. I'm old, guys. But but I assume that Time Warner started messing around with, say, you know, Disney to do a cross cartoon. It would be a nightmare. I've heard that about the 80s PSA cartoon, where every cartoon in the world, every character from the Ninja Turtles to Donald Duck showed up to keep that fucking snot-nosed kid off drugs. And he was a mean kid, whether he was on drugs or not. But, like, you know, they all showed up. That was a legal nightmare, and it was just to tell kids, don't do cocaine. So you can only imagine how, okay, our intellectual property is good. They're not getting together to help some kids out, to keep kids off PCP so they can pull a Helen Hunt, you know, on the after school special.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting together to actually determine which ones are better. You can only imagine what a legal nightmare that would be, you know, in Copperson. Again, if it went down differently, I'd love to hear it, but that's how I perceive that it would go down based on my real world experience. And kind of, you know, I mean, Jesse, that's also kind of how the comic reads.
Yeah.
No offense to the people who created it, but that's kind of how it reads. Trying to placate a lot of different interests here.
Yeah. I mean, they take a chance. And one thing, because I say they take a chance because they decide to go ahead and make this a battle that can be decided by the fans.
The most controversial aspect of it all.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I mean, for sure.
They say, okay, look, we're going to have 11 battles. What they do is they end up letting the first six get decided by the editors and the creators. And then the last five are decided by the fans themselves. Now, you say this is controversial. We covered Death in the Family.
It shouldn't be, but it was. Go on about Death in the Family.
You're right. We covered Death in the Family. And of course, that was one that came out in the 80s where you could vote whether Jason Todd lived or died.
Crowbar or no.
Exactly. And we had found out controversy had hit when supposedly some guy had programmed his computer to actually call and vote over 700 times. So a lot of people believed at first, or at least if you talk to a lot of people who haven't really looked into it, they thought it was a blowout. They thought everybody chose to kill off Jason Todd and it was a landslide. And what it ended up actually being was actually a very close vote. And if you go and look at this supposed guy that went in there and voted with his computer dialing this number, I think the results actually would have shifted another way around, but they didn't have any way to prove it. So when you say controversy, are we talking controversy something similar to that? Or are you just saying it's because we allowed the public in there to decide what was going on. What did you mean by that exactly?
Well, first off, what a fucking computer genius in 1988 to set his computer up to call a 900 number again and again. I wonder if he also like cheated out of the phone bill. With all contests like this, it's a popularity contest. That's what it's going to happen when it comes to voting.
Yeah,
I hear about it every year. I'm a huge Major League Baseball fan. Kansas City Royals, like I already said, world champs. So every year in the All-Star game, there's always somebody who should be starting, somebody who isn't. And there's fans who piss and moan and whine because the teams that are better or have a bigger market tend to get more players in. And to me, I'm of the mindset that the more the public can participate, the better things are in just about every regard of life.
Sure.
And so I don't think it was controversial. And it's controversial. It shouldn't have been controversial. I think that you had a lot of people who – I don't know. I don't know the right word to say, but let's call them whiny pissants.
There you go.
For lack of a better term.
That's where I was going.
You have these whiny pissants who are just mad because Lobo on paper should be Wolverine, but they would call these dumbasses are going to vote. As though the idea, as though the only criteria for voting, it wasn't, hey, man, this is what this guy can do, and this is what this guy can do, and you should vote for the one that would win if they were real. It was vote. If that's your criteria, great. If you like Lobo more, vote for him. If you like Wolverine more, vote for him. If you want to, like, you know, wipe your ass in the dark with two different pieces of paper, and one has Lobo on it, one has Wolverine on it, and that's how you chose whichever one you wipe with, you voted for the other one. That's fine. There was no criteria for this voting. But these That's people right. just got whiny. And then I think that was exacerbated by the disappointment of the fights. This DC versus Marvel was only 4 issues. It really could have benefited in a lot of ways from being 12 issues. A lot of people complain about decompression of comics these days. This really could have used some decompression. Things happen so fast. Things happen before you're even done processing that Flash has beat Quicksilver. You're off to Robin Jubilee or whoever. Mm-hmm. And I think things needed to slow down, and they didn't have the space they needed to tell a fight. For instance, you know, the big thing everybody going to talk about is Lobo versus Wolverine. Oh my, I mean, that's like the most fan whining I had heard until like this year. And I think this year it's a tie between the pissants who hate the Ghostbusters movie because it's all ladies, you're pissants, and these people who keep whining because they can't go to every convention and buy every toy. Life sucks, people. Do you realize like 30,000 kids starved to death today in the world? Another 30,000 died of diseases that were preventable. You can't go to San Diego and get the Ninja Turtles toys. I'm sorry, motherfucker. What do you want? It was the same sentiment. I mean, this is the loudest it's been since DC Marvel and the whole fucking Wolverine Lobo thing. And I think the issue to me with these fights, it's not that Lobo should beat Wolverine or how could Storm take out Wonder Woman or what the fuck ever. To me, it's more that they were done poorly. Look, you're like, look at what Lobo's got. Lobo's stronger and he's bigger and he's faster than Wolverine and he has better senses, la-di-la-di. There's no way Wolverine could beat him. Well, that's fucking funny because for the last 25 years, I've been seeing Wolverine do this a time or two in that one comic. What's it called? Oh, yeah, the X-Men. That's right. That's the one. And then he does it again in another comic. Oh, yeah, Wolverine, right? Right? Superheroes and almost all fantasy are predicated upon the hero being, you know, at a disadvantage versus the villain. The problem isn't that Wolverine beat Lobo. The problem is it was told in a shitty way. We see Wolverine come up with clever ways to beat guys more powerful than him all the time, e.g. Sabretooth. His archenemy is stronger, faster than him, has his good senses, etc. But he comes up with a way to beat him because he's the hero. The problem for me was that, and I think it exacerbated the whiny pissants who were already yelling that people were going to get it wrong. Then these fights, you know, and again, I don't want to knock the creators too much. They just didn't deliver. I want to see Wolverine beat Lobo in a really cool, clever way. Not just, we're on the other side of the ball. Here's a panel. Claws up. I don't need that. Show me how he did it. And I think that's where the controversy comes from. I think it's a combination between the people who are mad because voters would quote unquote get it wrong, combined with the fights not delivering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. That was a long rant, y'all.
No, man. You're good. You're good. You mentioned this is a 4-issue series. Here's the thing. Fights end in 3. Four is our wrap up. And four is our way of getting shit together.
And it's like double size, too.
I get this particular trade, and it actually has five issues in it. It goes the first three, which are all our battles, and then we have an issue of an amalgam character by the name of Dr. Strange Fate popped in there, and then we hit the fourth issue. Yeah, all our stuff is in pretty much in three issues, but it feels like it should have been just give it some time, write a good story around it. And it didn't feel like a lot of these battles had, you mentioned the word, I think you said rushed. I don't know if that's what you said, but it almost felt like it was rushed to get it out there. But
maybe because they were behind, you know, schedule, maybe because it was so hard to get everybody on the same page to where, you know, for such a huge event to where they were already behind schedule by the time they started. Maybe it was for the simple fact that they better get this done before somebody changed their mind.
That's right. Damn, you want to get it out there. Oh, boy, I would have hated to have had to rewrite something or do. Yeah. Oh, geez.
I've heard when it comes to the trade paperback, too, that they're like two different versions.
Really?
I've heard that I can't confirm this, but I've heard that like one of them has DC winning three of them and the other has Marvel winning three of them. And in both editions, like only Superboy and Lobo are losers, you know, in both of them. That's what I've heard. I can't confirm that. Wikipedia says the same thing, but it doesn't have a citation on it. So if that's not true, I apologize, everyone. But if it is true, fuck, you got to go get another one.
I know. Damn. Okay, let's talk about the battles here because we've already mentioned a couple of them. Let's talk about the first six. You hop in there. I'll read them down. I'll give you the opportunity to get your two cents in on what happened here, or what you think should have happened. The first six that occur. We have Thor and Captain Marvel face off. Now, Thor, the son of Odin, the Asgardian, the welder of Mjolnir. And then we have Captain Marvel from DC. I should say Thor's from Marvel, folks, just in case you haven't figured that out. But Captain Marvel from DC, Billy Batson, I believe.
World's mightiest mortal.
And I could tell you my knowledge of DC 90s. Put it in a thimble, okay? I might have read a crossover when they crossed over with Marvel at some point.
But like, I read this and nothing else.
It was
this
bad.
Is DC for me.
But we know that our Marvel characters in the 90s were going through some pretty big changes. When we talk about Spider-Man, we're going to bring up just a tiny bit of a big issue with him. So Thor's looking a little bit 90s out here. I don't know if there's any significant. I don't know if there's any significant change here with him. It's we're still talking the Thor that we're used to nowadays, right? Was there anything big different back in the 90s that you were aware of with him?
I think this is around the time that Warren Ellis is doing the title.
Okay.
And I think they were changing some things around. We're almost a Heroes Reborn. I think that happens like later in 96, I want to say.
Yes.
So right before the Heroes Reborn stuff, there were some really interesting changes going on in Thor's title. I actually haven't had the chance to read them because, again, we didn't have a comic book store then. I was only reading about them in Wizard. I'm very interested. I like Thor's look here immensely. Mm-hmm. And I think there's like a story like the World Breaker or World Ender storyline that's, you know, and it's supposed to be pretty good. And I think J.M.D. Matisse before Warren Ellis or right after him was doing some interesting things on the title too. As far as Captain Marvel over on the DC side, just to confuse you guys, he was in the middle of probably what in my opinion are like the best stories he had since his heyday of the 40s and 50s in the Power of Shazam title. Written by Jerry Ordway, great painted covers by Jerry Ordway. Mike Manley did the finished art. I can't remember the penciler's name, but it lasted like 48 issues. And I'm a huge Captain Marvel fan. He's my third favorite superhero, so I'm biased. But I would say this is like must read for anybody who just really wants to read some fun comics. In particular, people who think the 90s were just shoulder pads and guns and pouches and ladies with small waists and big tits. Read Power of Shazam. It'll touch you in so many different ways. So, I mean, Thor versus Captain Marvel, it's a good choice. There's only one choice of these fights, and I'm like, what the fuck, people? But we'll get to that one. Now, this is a good one. I'll let you tell the result, but suffice to say, Captain Marvel's my third favorite guy, so I didn't like
it. Yeah, Thor bests Captain Marvel by calling down the lightning.
Well, he steals Captain Marvel's lightning.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
That's how Captain Marvel That's how Billy Batson becomes Captain Marvel. He says Shazam and the lightning comes down. And Thor, well, the way I read it was that Thor stole it. Thor's like, lightning, I know what's up with that. Which I don't really have a problem with Thor winning. I just wish Captain Marvel had won. I don't want to piss on the choices. It's fine. Whoever wins. I just wish my guy had won. This is actually a really brilliant way for Thor to win without Captain Marvel looking bad.
All right. Yeah, and I totally read that wrong. I thought he hit him with lightning because I know that he, you know, obviously when he calls down Shazam or says Shazam, he gets struck by lightning and then he changes. Now he changes into the little boy to get out of some kind of wreckage. And then he's about to change back. And I guess that's when Thor takes it, right? Is that what
right,
you're saying?
Right, right. That's the way I read it.
I'm actually now
feverishly trying to find him. Like, am I an idiot?
Nope. You're perfectly sane, sir. he ends up taking his lightning. And that's what causes Thor to actually lose his hammer.
Right. Which Wonder Woman then picks up.
Yeah, Wonder Woman picks up Thor's hammer, folks. I mean, holy crap.
Which I totally agree with. She is like, I think she's the most noble, best DC superhero they have. I think in a lot of ways she's the one who would be the most worthy because she's the one who really just wants peace. At the end of the day, Wonder Woman is like, listen, I love peace so much, I'm willing to punch you in the jaw for it. You know what I mean? Which doesn't make sense, but it does on some level. Sometimes in order, you know, to get the... Sometimes if a bad guy asks for something loudly enough, a good guy's just got to give it to him. And Wonder Woman can step up and be that good guy much more effectively than most other people. And she's understanding. So it's great that she picked up Thor's hammer. Interestingly enough, later in JLA Avengers, Superman will use Thor's hammer temporarily, but he's not really worthy of it. Odin had lifted the enchantment for just a little bit. Later at the end, when he tries to hand it back to Thor, he can't lift it. So that means, folks, that we lived in a world where Wonder Woman was worthy of the power of Thor, but Superman wasn't.
I know we're going through the battles here, but folks, I want you to understand that if you have the opportunity to pick up this trade, just to be able to see our heroes and villains interact with each other in this same world, they do a great job of making it entertaining. There's one specific point I thought was very funny where this guy comes across this store that certainly did not have all this Warner Brothers stuff in there the day before. What the heck is going on here? But it's so cool to see our heroes and villains from each universe mixing it up. They do a good job. I'm looking at Wolverine going at it with Killer Croc. Bane looked like he's about to break Captain America's back. Yeah. Holy, I mean, just great stuff you wanted to see as
Superman versus Juggernaut.
Oh, dude.
The only real problem I had with any of that was just that when it was Thanos versus Darkseid, it just seemed hokey. They just showed up like, all right, we're going to fight now. We're going to fight. And I was like, I mean, I like seeing them fight, but it made me want more. I'm like, wow, I want to know more.
Yeah,
you know, I'd like to see more of it. It would have been interesting if they had included a couple villain fights to vote on or villain fights in the regular fights even.
That's right. So, next battle. Aquaman versus Namor. This is about as, I mean, almost looking in the mirror as you get when it comes to these two universes, really. You have Aquaman, who is, you know, obviously you're the Lord of the Seas over here in DC, and Namor, the very same over in Marvel.
We both rule Atlantis.
I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent. Namor's usually a prick anyway.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't know if things are changed very much here in the 90s for Namor, because I was not following him in any way, shape, or form. Aquaman, however, if you look at Aquaman, he's not your orange-tided DC.
If anything, they've made him more like Namor, like attitude-wise. His attitude is that of Namor. All of a sudden, he's the prick from under the sea.
Mm-hmm. He's got this... He had lost his hand. He's got this like trident. I don't even know if it's trident. It's this crazy looking hook for a hand. Yes, the harpoon. He uses that. As they fight, you know, they're trading barbs at each other, and they come to a standoff where I don't know if they're standing on a dock or I think it's a dock of some sort, and they're kind of talking, and Aquaman just drops a whale on the name. Just straight up out of nowhere. And I shared this picture on Twitter, but if you look at that whale, he's got a smile on his face. I swear he does. He is definitely grinning. He's cool.
He's cool.
What do you think of this? I mean, you all right with this particular result?
I mean, yeah. I like Namor a lot more than I like Aquaman. Although it's important to note that Peter David writing Aquaman, if not at this time, pretty close to this time, and he's done a bang up job on it. And I liked his Aquaman, but I mostly liked it because he reminded me of Namor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of Namor. Namor, really the superhero-dom's first anti-hero. Because if you go back and read the Golden Age Namor stuff, like even before he fights the Human Torch, like he's like, oh, I hate everybody on the surface world. Here's a tidal wave. And he throws like a fucking cop car into like, you know, the Hudson River. He's like, now you'll die. Then like two panels later, he's like, maybe you shouldn't. And he like goes and fishes him out or he saves a different cop. You know what I mean? So he's always been, you know, kind of hot-headed and everything. And I like that. I wish he would have won. Have no problem with Aquaman.
Again, it's just incapacitation. Okay.
Right.
A whale may have dropped on Namor.
If they had a real fight, there's no telling who would win. He won, you know, and I don't even think he cheated. Like he brags, Aquaman's like, I'll cheat and you won't. I'm like, is it really cheating to use your power to like, you know, incapacitate? Like that's what you're supposed to do, champ.
Exactly. Flash and Quicksilver. Now, you've already mentioned how the Flash beat Quicksilver here. It doesn't seem like there's...
It's a joke.
Yeah, it really does not seem like there's too much involved here when it comes to... I mean, there's no way I would even imagine Quicksilver could do anything against Flash.
It's so funny to think about because Quicksilver can run, from what I understand, like 700 or 800 miles an hour. And that's insane. Like, you know, like, I mean, like... Wow, you know, like if somebody could do that in our world, great. But you're like, chump change. Like the Flash runs so fast that he can get there 2 days ago.
Yeah, Speed Force and all that stuff.
Right. It's a battle that had to happen. It's one that everyone would ask about. It's not like you could have like you know Flash versus Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, who's basically like a laser or something, which that would be more interesting from a speed level, but she's not on that echelon. Like Quicksilver is Marvel's speedster. He's the speed guy with the Avengers. Flash is the speed guy with the Justice League of America. They got a race. Flash won. Everybody knew it was going to go down.
There was no doubt. Yeah. All right.
It'd be funny to hear somebody argue it the other way. I'd be interested to hear. It's not like you can't write a story where Quicksilver wins. Again, these are heroes who overcome tremendous odds. I'd be interested to hear that story. I'd be interested to hear the defense of it. Then I would immediately laugh and tell the person they were wrong. No, for real. If you like that that way, you like it that way. I don't see how it could work. That's why I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah, I don't think of any other speed. There's no other speedster in the Marvel universe that I could really even think
Silver
of.
Silver Surfer, you know, somebody like that, sure. But these are the icons. It's got to be icon versus icon for the most part, except for one stupid-ass fight. We'll get to it.
Well, the next up on the list... Robin versus Jubilee.
What a waste of a slot. What a waste of a fucking slot. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, like, Jubilee is like the worst X-Man ever. And if you disagree, that's fine. I think you're wrong. But, you know, everybody comes from a different time and they have their own. Like, Jubilee's just useless. I don't see what she's doing in here. I don't really want Robin to fight anybody. In my opinion, this is the slot that should have gone to Green Arrow Hawkeye. That's what we wanted to see.
Or get another
lady versus lady fight involved. Have Black Canary She-Hulk or some shit, you know, or Power Girl She-Hulk. But, like, this is a waste of a slot. It's a waste of my time. Their whole sappy romance thing takes up too much of this book.
Oh.
I don't know what it's doing in there. I mean, again, God bless the creators. I'm not trying to, you know, shit on them personally. This didn't work for me in such a way that I'm vehemently angry that it exists 20 fucking years later.
The only thing that I could think of to potentially justify it would be to show that, hey, our universes can get along. And by golly, you know, love conquers all.
Ah, do it with somebody. I'm down with that message, but do it with somebody besides fucking Jubilee. Have Robin romance Squirrel Girl or some shit.
That would have been something to see.
I'd have been in. I admit that I have an irrational hatred of Jubilee's all character. Right. I mean, I admit that freely, but if you watch the X-Men cartoon, you understand why.
All right. Which, by the way, Robin, I think, wakes up in her bed.
Yeah. It's all so weird. Anyway, yeah. And the reason she likes him is they're like dressed the fucking same. We both wear red and yellow.
These things aren't going on. These battles are not going on in secret. amongst the world here,
like everybody knows.
Everybody knows. I think something gets shared, like with everybody telepathically or something weird. Like, okay, everybody now knows that these champions have to fight each other in order for one universe to survive and the other universe to die. In 96, if I would have been reading this myself, and not knowing much of the internet back then, I don't know if I would have bought into the whole, holy crap, one universe is going to end. There's no way.
No. It's like when somebody's like, if I lose this wrestling match, I will never wrestle in North America again.
Terry Funk. All right,
well, you're going to win this motherfucker, then ain't you?
Terry Funk, like
when you go to see the Ghostbusters movie, you figure the Ghostbusters win. You figure that the ghosts don't kill everybody. Yeah, there's no way that one universe is going to die. Although that would have been funny. Be like, yep, we don't publish anymore. Sorry, you guys voted us out of existence. It was a legal contract.
Robin Jubilee, by the way, after they kiss, then fights, and then Robin takes her out by lassoing her pretty much with some kind of thing he does. I don't know.
He tricks her with his cape, and she's like making those sparkly doodads that couldn't make a lightning bug light up its ass. They're fucking useless. You know, he never does anything with them. And he like tricks her and ties her up, and then I guess they make out while she's tied up. It's like hey. Or something. I don't fucking
know. Whoa,
family show. We've been talking that long, but this is a family show.
They're all over each other. So he incapacitates her by tying her up. It's not like she's knocked out or anything. Boom, mark one for DC. Ramen has won. So if you guys are keeping track here, it's actually 3-1 as I'm running down through this. Thor's the only Marvel guy that's won here so far. Aquaman, Flash, Robin, 3 DC. So next up, Catwoman versus Elektra. What do you think of this particular matchup? I mean, anything that rubs you the wrong way? Or
these are good ladies to pick. I mean, I think that they were on the verge or had just launched a new Elektra title under the Marvel Edge imprint when they, during Marvolution, when they scrapped the editor-in-chief and they had like four, there was Marvel Heroes and Alterniverse and, you know, X-Men and Spider-Man titles. And there was also Edge where they put Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider and Punisher. So they just, they were just getting that character going again. Catwoman, the 90s stuff, I mean, especially stuff written by Joe Duffy is really good. If you can get past Jim Valent, like just making her boobs go from like watermelon big to like Goodyear blimp big is like, I mean, by the page. I mean, you know, I mean, and, but the stories are pretty good. And it's not like he draws poorly. He loves female breasts.
I hear you. That's all right.
But I probably would have rather seen Elektra versus Black Canary, just because Black Canary's seen as, you know, a bigger, you know, she's a better fighter. But this is a good matchup. Both of them are seen as like, they're the bad girls. I mean, it's like Catwoman works with Batman, but then she steals a batarang. And Elektra works with Daredevil, but then she steals something. You know, I mean, so this is a good matchup. I'm more interested in an Elektra-Black Canary fight, because I don't believe Catwoman's in Elektra's league whatsoever when it comes to hand-to-hand stuff. Sneaking in and out, I mean, they're probably on par, but Elektra's a lady who goes toe-to-toe with Daredevil. A Catwoman never really goes toe-to-toe with Batman.
And I think...
I mean, they interact, but they hardly fight.
Mm-hmm. Elektra's got that killer instinct, too. She was trained as a
softy.
Yeah. I don't recall her actually going and... I'd say going as dark as Elektra has in the past.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, you know, if you remember in the late 80s, they made her a whore. She hadn't been a whore before.
And I do recall yes.
I think she killed somebody during that and decided not to kill anybody. It's not that I don't think the Catwoman isn't capable of killing someone, but that's not something she does. For the most part, she takes, I mean, part of her title at the time was she had a couple ladies, I believe, who stayed with her, at least one, because they were strays. She took them in. They didn't know where to go. So, and of course, she got 100,000 cats. Elektra, I don't know enough about Elektra. I'm not a huge fan of the character, but I can't imagine her owning a pet. I can't imagine Catwoman not owning 100 cats. So, you know, to me, Catwoman, it's not like Catwoman, look, Catwoman would kick my ass, your ass, a lot of dudes' asses, you know, but Elektra is the ninja assassin who kicked death's ass. So, you know, I mean, like, yep. I understand why they're fighting. The matchup when it comes to physical prowess just isn't enticing.
Yeah, Elektra takes the battle. So
we should.
Yes, I agree. So we got one more point for Marvel here. And then our final editorial writer battle is between Silver Surfer and Green Lantern, who I believe, for some reason, I'm thinking they've teamed up. And that's mentioned actually in this book.
Yeah, their crossover comes out right before this. I don't know exactly when, but within 6 months, a year at the most, probably closer to 6 months, and actually serves as a prequel of sorts to the DC versus Marvel crossover. And Ron Mars writes it, who again is writing Green Lantern, writing Silver Surfer, writing the DC versus Marvel. This is a good fight, and it's one that had to happen. And to be honest, I'm surprised it wasn't a voting one.
Yeah, no kidding. These two guys, I mean, these are big names.
I think Thor versus Captain Marvel, you can make an argument that it should have been a vote too. But Captain Marvel, despite the fact that he's, you know, an all-time great, he's kind of lost his luster as time goes on. You know, think of him as like, think of him as one of those old-timey baseball players like Ty Cobb or Honus Wagner or Walter Johnson. We can tell they were great, but it's really hard to think of them in today's terms because we can't ever see how great they were. It's kind of the Captain Marvel. I mean, it's a guy who outsold Superman, but then he went away for 20 years and has never really gotten back there. So I think there's an argument could be made for it, but I understand why it didn't happen. Silver Surfer versus Green Lantern. I don't know which one you knock out, but maybe you just add both of them so that there's an odd number, but it's just hard to believe it didn't get the fan vote treatment.
Silver Surfer takes the victory here. Me personally, I kind of agree with that. I think the power cosmic is something. I understand the cosmic battery and you got the Green Lantern and all that willpower and all that stuff, but I think I easily would give Silver Surfer the nod in this particular case. And I know there's a lot of people that probably would disagree.
It's not as simple as Silver Surfer versus Green Lantern. It's Silver Surfer versus Kyle Rayner. Are we talking about Silver Surfer versus Hal Jordan or Silver Surfer versus Guy Gardner or Kilowog or John Stewart? Or I mean, fuck, even Golden Age Alan Scott. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, those might be a different story. At this point, Kyle Rayner's not too far removed from having seen his girlfriend stuffed in the refrigerator by Major Force. Mm. He's still an incredible neophyte superhero. I can't believe that Silver Surfer would use to a ring slinger who's only been ring slinging in real, you know, for argument's sake, let's say 8 to 12 months at this point. Silver Surfer's had the power cosmic for like eons. It's hard for me to believe. Do I believe that Hal Jordan gave him a run for his money? Yeah. My money's always going to be on the Surfer, but it's decidedly on the Surfer when it comes to, you know, facing someone who's still in their nascent days of superheroing. You know, give me Alan Scott, give me Hal Jordan, give me John Stewart. Maybe we're telling a different story. Or even Sinestro.
Very good point. It's one thing I got to keep reminding myself. This is the 20-year anniversary of this thing. And we've got to think about what was going on in the 1990s, who these characters were. Yeah, we're talking Kyle Rayner here as Green Lantern. So very good point. So that's our writers and editors choice. They were the ones that made the decisions on these battles. Now we get to talk about the fan voted battles. Now, I don't think there was any other way to vote unless you used a paper ballot. I want to read it here. Alternative voting methods. All right. We have
it. Okay. I got it up now too. So.
Yeah, you have the official ballot here that you could cut and send in. So you could mail that off to the battle 96, or you could email votes to the America Online ballot boxes of your five heroes. And we have actual email addresses.
I wonder if they still work.
Oh, dude, like, that was the first thing I thought of.
I was like, can I still vote for Wonder Woman here? And of course, I think the primary way that they were encouraging you to vote on this was to do it at your local comic book store, which is ironic because at this point, there were the fewest number of comic book stores that there had been in, like, I don't know, as long as there had been comic book stores.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, this is a dark time when it comes to actually, it comes to sales and shops. It's very scary. A lot of people went out of business. Gosh, at my shop here in my town, it stuck around, and I think it's still going. It's under different management. I believe the guy sold it, but that place has been there since 91, 92, I think. So yeah. He's been around for quite a while. We're talking 24 years. It changed management, I think, there in early 2000s because the owner actually passed away. I was lucky enough to have somebody that I had a pool list with, and was able to say, okay, hey, keep a hold of this. Through college, like I said, I wasn't reading a whole lot, but I still had a pull list going on. So even though this kind of fell under my radar, oh, I was still getting my Cable. I was still getting my X-Man. I'd come back in from college, and dude, I would have a stack. I didn't understand what I was doing back then, you know, when it came to actually saying, hey, maybe you should take a couple off the list instead of adding more to it.
Oh, man, that's the same. I can't do pull lists anymore for that reason. Like, before I know it, like, I'm spending like $170 a month on new comics. And new comics are just like a car. You walk out the door, it's worth half as much.
It's the truth.
You walk out the door and you spend $180 on $90 worth of comics. Not that I'm in it for the money, but like I can't afford this. I can't afford to be dropping those dimes.
All right, so here we go. These are the fights that the people could vote on. And we have already a 3-3 tie, and that's actually being published in papers in this universe. People are standing up on top of the news. Oh, it's 3-3. So our next fight, which we've gone into a little bit in depth here already, that we're going to talk about, is Lobo versus Wolverine. Wolverine takes the victory in a bar room brawl. I guess that's where it ends, where both of them are fighting. And we don't get to see the killing blow, but we don't get to see the final blow because these guys proceed to battle behind a bar counter. And we all we see is the counter of the bar and just shit flying up. So we don't really get to see anything other than at the end, Wolverine gets up and lights a cigar. And so we're taking that Lobo is bested by Wolverine.
My issue just is it's never going to be that Wolverine won. And I think anybody who has an issue with somebody winning, they're a pissant, or they like to talk to hear themselves speak, or they're just way too wrapped up in this. Okay. It's okay when your side loses. All right. Like, I wanted Captain Marvel to beat Thor. He didn't. I wanted the Royals to beat the Tigers today. They didn't. It's okay. It's all right. But I think where we get let down in regards to this fight is it's not enjoyable. Wolverine doesn't do anything clever. We don't get to understand how they won, what anything that happened. It's just, it's like I said, they go behind a bar. He puts his hand up, grabs his cigar, smokes it. It's anticlimactic for something that was hyped so much and something that people had looked forward to so much.
These were two.
Something that we'd never see again. This is the only time you'll see Wolverine and Lobo fight. And it's an utter letdown. And I can't live with that. Come up with Peter David and Ron Mars are clever guys. And I feel like they could have come up with 100 more clever ways for Wolverine to win. I'm sure they were hamstrung by both space and editorial/legal concerns.
Two of the most popular characters at that time, too. I mean, Wolverine was, I mean, he was off the charts in the 90s. Yeah. Lobo, I can remember seeing him all over the place.
Yeah, he was DC's big guy when in the early 90s, especially when the anti-hero triumvirate of Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Frank Castle, the Punisher, were dominating not just their own books, but seemingly every book that Marvel put out from Alpha Flight to ALF. Lobo was like the only real guy in that vein that DC could toss up. Deathstroke the Terminator, maybe being another guy you could put up. But Lobo was the guy as far as here's our nasty attitude, anti-hero.
Yeah.
And at this time, he has his own ongoing series. I think it's about to end or it's getting in the next two years or so. But yeah, this is easily the most, you know, within 3 years of Lobo being the most popular he'd ever be. It's the 90s are certainly his most popular decade. It'd be hard to disagree with that. And that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like Lobo fans would have been let down or the people who just think that the right guy had to win. If the fight had just been clever, it's not clever. There's no reason to believe even after you read it that there's any way Wolverine could have or should have beaten him. But I feel like we could have gotten something better out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I hate it as much as I hate Robin Jubilee, though.
It's up there, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, other than Nazis, I'm not sure that I hate much of anything as much as I hate Robin Jubilee. That's hyperbole, folks. It's a podcast joke.
All right, next up. Now, we talked about Wonder Woman grabbing Thor's hammer, and she's wielding Thor's hammer right now, and she faces off the goddess of thunder, which would be Storm. I say the goddess of thunder. She was
worshipped as a goddess.
Yes, there you go. She was master of the skies, not the skies. But anyway, they come together and they have to fight. And boy, if there is one that I disagree with here, I'm going to have to say that I really disagree with the result of this battle. First off, just to let everybody know, Wonder Woman does not fight Storm with the hammer. She actually lays the hammer down on the ground, not
thus
on
Storm. Proving that she was worthy of it.
Yes. Yes, she lays it down, and she goes toe-to-toe with Storm. Wonder Woman comes out the loser of this particular battle. Storm bests her in this battle here. What do you think of this, man? Are you on the same side as I am, thinking that this shouldn't have been gone down like this, or what?
Sure. I mean, my vote certainly would have gone to Wonder Woman. I don't see any way that Storm could beat Wonder Woman straight up. I mean, Wonder Woman's as close to a god as you can get. Storm is worshipped as a goddess, but of course not really a god. But again, the fans vote. They voted for the person who was more popular. There's no way when this was lined up that anybody thought that Wonder Woman was going to win, because she's just, I don't know, it's weird. I love Wonder Woman. I think she's terrific, and I like to have a Wonder Woman figures. I like seeing her in the Justice League, but she's never been tremendously popular. Her sales have never been super huge, except for the early days of Wonder Woman. And at this time, she has a book, seemingly because she just has to have a book. Because from what I understand, if they ever stop publishing Wonder Woman for a certain amount of time, the rights will go back to the Marston family, the guy who created it.
Wow.
So I think now, if you had this same result now, Wonder Woman beats Storm handily.
Yes.
Because the X-Men have been pushed back in the X-Men have been pushed back to a less prominent role in the Marvel Universe and in superhero comics in general because of that. But also, I think fans are a little, I don't want to say they're smarter now, because again, there's no criteria. You vote wherever you want. If you like Storm more, vote for Storm. It's not like there can't be a plausible way for Storm to beat Wonder Woman. We saw one here. Usually when I talk about this stuff with my friends, I'm like, it's 100 fights. Mm-hmm. How many fights do you think Wonder Woman would beat Storm if they fought 100 times? And I got to say, I think Wonder Woman wins, let's say, 82 of these fights.
Yep.
Okay. So it's not like Storm couldn't win one or what have you. So I disagree with the outcome, but I have no problem with the people picking the person they wanted to see win. Never. I'm very rarely going to disagree with the results of the people, you know, unless they're voting for something that's just, you know, super awful. Like, you know, like we're voting to burn down DC Comics. Like that seems rash.
You know I mean? Yeah, like, we might
want to. The fans of the 90s wanted their X-Men. They wanted their X-Men to look good. They got what they voted.
Yeah. And in a twisting turn of events, Wonder Woman lays down Thor's hammer, and the way she gets defeated is, of course, by lightning. So that's a bummer.
You should have talked to Thor about it.
Exactly.
He's like, no, you can take that.
All right, next up. We have a Clone War. Oh, we're going Star Wars? No. We have Spider-Man fighting Superboy. 1996. Spider-Man is not the Peter Parker that we all know. However, he is a clone by the name of Ben Reilly. Ben Reilly took up the costume of Spider-Man. I can honestly not tell you why he did. I just know, I think Peter Parker took the back. You know, he's like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. And I think he took up the costume. Am I right on that?
More or less, yeah. There came a point where Peter Parker and Mary Jane, you know, they go to, like, you know, they're on their own, like, Jack Kerouac adventure. We're on the road. And I think that's when he's, you know, took up the mantle of Spider-Man. He has a slightly different costume than you're accustomed to. It's not so different that you don't instantly fucking recognize that it's Spider-Man. I heard one or two people comment, you know, when we were, you know, because we've been sharing some pictures and stuff about this as we've been doing our research. One or two people have commented and be like, oh, it's such a shame that it's that Spider-Man. Who gives a shit? Look at this guy and tell me you think he's anybody but Spider-Man. Christ. Spider-Man versus Superboy. Get over it. I mean, I didn't like the clone story much more than anybody else, mostly because it dragged on for so long, but I'm not going to let that ruin a DC Marvel crossover for me.
Well, this Spider-Man here, Ben Reilly, even though he's got all the powers and everything like that as our well-beloved Peter Parker, this is a Spider-Man that, I mean, he's obviously brand new. He's not, I assume that he's only been crime fighting for a few years, just kind of like you were talking about with Kyle Rayner.
I guess he had, like, crime fought up until the original clone storyline of the 70s, right?
Okay. Because,
like, he would have been the real one and the clone would have taken over. So I guess anything up to I don't remember when they settled that, around like Amazing Spider-Man number 150 or something. So I guess all those adventures were his.
Okay.
And then, he goes away. Then he comes back. And now he's doing it again and he's new. But none of it matters because it turns out he was the fake Spider-Man anyway. Later on. Spoiler alert, guys. Peter Parker's Spider-Man.
Well, he fights Superboy, who is a, we find out, is a clone of Superman.
Right.
Let's just say he has some of Superman's powers. He's got flight, but he has this thing called tactile kinesis. Spider-Man takes out Superboy, which I thought, interesting turn of events here, where he gets him caught in some electrical wires and knocks Superboy out. So,
and he uses his impact webbing, which is apparently a gimmick that he was using in the books at the time. I don't remember anything about it. Don't know shit from apple butter about it.
But Superboy has been taken out, and Spider-Man is the victor. So right here we have, we got five battles. Three of them right in a row are all Marvel. So these next two really honestly don't matter. DC should be shutting their office down right now. They should be packing up and getting the hell out wherever they're at and stop publishing. But we still got two battles that's got to go on, and that's the next one up is Hulk versus Superman.
You know, this is one of the ones that I find to be the hardest one to determine, because I feel like Hulk and also Punisher in a different way, these guys are superheroes that are really forces of nature, not really people, not really entities. And it just seems like nothing can stop the Hulk. That having been said, I mean, he's Superman. He's the greatest hero of all, the granddaddy superhero of them all. I got no problem with how this went down, and it would have been surprising if Superman didn't win. I mean, for argument's sake, I mean, this is the most popular Superman had been since like the 50s, 40s when the 50s when he was on TV, George Reeves. Even probably more popular than in 76 in the late 70s when the first movie came out with George Reeves is the guy from the 50s, Christopher Reeve, the one from the 70s. I think that they were on a creative high. They're on a sales high. It's hard to believe that, you know, Superman certainly had more exposure. It's hard to believe Hulk could overcome that. Superman at this point essentially had a weekly book. He had four monthly titles: Superman, Action Comics, Adventures of Superman, and Superman, The Man of Steel. On fifth weeks, when they didn't have a Superman title come out because there were 5 weeks in a month, they had like the Superman Chronicles. It's like a quarterly title that would come out, right? So these guys, I mean, there's a lot of Superman. There's one Hulk book. Mm-hmm. So, I think Hulk could take Superman in a fight. Like, for me personally, I have no problem with the vote. I have no problem with Superman winning the fight. What do you think?
I agree. This particular Hulk that they had here, which was
exactly,
we're not talking Savage Hulk Smash Hulk in any way. This is Hulk with, I believe, again, you step in there and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this might have been, is this the Professor Hulk where it's got, okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with this particular version, which, you know, he's got the intelligence, but he does not have, I don't think he has the rage to take Superman out. So I completely agree with the results of this one. All right, final battle. Fight. Batman takes on Captain America in the sewers. We got the world's greatest detective, very intelligent. We got our super soldier, Captain America, he would rather talk something out instead of hitting somebody. Yeah. I think both of these guys are, you know, they sort of mirror each other in that respect. They're both very savvy. You know, I can't see them getting into a fight, much like a lot of these heroes against each other. But you see in this particular book, they talk a good bit through it, but they know that they have to battle. Captain America loses to Batman he hits him with a batarang or something, takes him out. That's our final battle. Like I said, it really kind of doesn't matter. Assuming you're keeping score as you're going through, it almost doesn't matter.
Well, I think John Byrne had a quote, something like, look, Batman's the world's greatest detective. If I want somebody or something found, he's the guy to do it. When I want that person stopped, Captain America is the world's greatest soldier. He's better to put them down. And later on in JLA Avengers, Kurt Busiek and George Perez touch upon that. Like, when Batman and Captain America go to fight, they don't touch. They just keep like changing stances and positions. And then Batman's like, well, all right, you could beat me. It would take you a long time to do so.
Yeah.
But you could beat me. So let's really figure out what's going on here, you and me, because there's no point. So, yeah, I mean, I think Captain America, obviously, if you're asking me, again, 100 fights, I think Captain America takes Batman like 75 out of 100 fights. I mean, in a straight up fight. But again, this is a vote, and it's not like Batman's not capable of taking out Captain America. He certainly defeats other characters that have more superpowers than Captain America, or better at fighting maybe even than Captain America. So I have no problem with the result. And again, like you said, it didn't even matter at this point anyway.
I don't understand why they structured it that way. I really don't. I think you would want it to be like, okay, we're down to that last fight. This is the one. This is the fifth fight that's going to, you know, it's going to change everything. They didn't do it that way. They went.
Well, I think that would have really helped out with the 12 issue series as well. If you're having these fights and you're having the votes, you could have the fights later enough to where you had tabulated the votes to figure out how you wanted the fights to go. Basically, you know, I mean, we're seeing ads, you know, you need to go vote in December. This book is out in May. I mean, maybe not even that. I mean, maybe probably not even that far away. I mean, you're voting in December. Number one comes out. I mean, what is it? Cover dated February 96. So probably came out in January. So issue three where the fights are going on, that's March. We're voting in December. So they probably just had to draw it and hope that the votes went in such a way as to where like they could build up that tension. As it turns out, people do whatever they want. They don't always do exactly what you plan on.
That's true.
So I that would be my guess about it.
All right. Batman, Captain America, they fight. Batman wins the battle. They come out of the sewer. Obviously, Captain America and Batman are both talking. They're not enemies. They're friends here. Now one of the guys that I didn't mention here was a guy by the name of Access, who in this particular book is this guy who kind of has those two cosmic beings I was talking about that represent DC and Marvel in each continuity fighting almost inside of his head. Batman and Captain America just happen upon Access, who is still trying to figure out what the hell is going on, and he's starting to recognize this power, and what exactly is going on in his head is actually what is the representation of what is going on in the world where these champions are being pitted against each other. So he does some kind of crazy power thing, touches both Batman and Captain America, and the Amalgam Universe is born. So instead of us having a result where these two cosmic beings fight and we only have one winner, Marvel or DC, instead we get the best of both worlds, just like we've always wanted, and we this is a word, this is a term that's used in the back of this particular graphic novel. We smoosh them. I want to quote the guy who is this that wrote this this afterword here. This was Mike Gruenwald, executive editor of Marvel Universe at this time. They smoosh the universes together and we get Amalgam. And that's kind of almost the end of this particular story. I'm not going to belabor the rest of this and how they come apart. Pretty much what happens is there's a little bit of Access showing up in the Amalgam Universe, and we find out, of course, he knows everything's wrong, that these two beings should have never put this universe together, and we need to rip it apart. Now, the Amalgam Universe was pretty much a conglomeration of DC and Marvel come together. You see these heroes come together, and I'm definitely going to be covering that at some point in the future. So anybody that – yes, sir. Yes, sir. But we've got heroes like Darkclaw, an amalgamation of Batman and Wolverine, Doctor Strange Fate, Doctor Strange and Doctor Fate.
And Professor X.
And that's right. And Professor X, that happens at the end of
those were the ones that interested me the most, were like the ones where it's multiple guys, like Speed Demon was like Ghost Rider, Flash, and the Demon.
That's right. That's right. I assume I'm looking at the heroes here. I don't remember the titles, but I mean, I'm looking at one here that's clearly Doctor Doom and Doomsday meshed together. So yeah. Doctor Doomsday or something. Right. I don't know what his actual name is.
No, that is it. That is it. Doctor Doomsday and There's Magneto and the Magnetic Men,
mm-hmm.
and the Metal Men, maybe X-Patrol, JLX, Bullets and Bracelets, Iron Lantern, Thorian and the New Asgods, perhaps Amazon. I mean, all of those. I mean, because they did Amalgam again later.
Yeah, I actually
another run of it. I forget. I always forget which titles go exactly where, except Doctor Strange Fate. I know came here because Doctor Strange Fate's kind of a. He's awesome, but he's kind of a jerk. He's kind of a bad guy. He's the only Amalgam character who knows that shit ain't right.
I've got a list here. You've already named off some of them. Spider Boy, Lobo the Duck. I think came definitely later.
Yeah,
we got Spider Boy, Super Soldier, X Patrol, Assassins, Speed Demon, JLX, Bullets and Bracelets, Doctor Strange Fate, Bruce Wayne, Agent of Shield.
That's a good one.
Amazon. Magneto and the Magnetic Men and Legends of the Dark Claw. Those were the, what is that, 12 that came out, and that came out leap week of 1996. Is that right?
Yeah, and Legends of Dark Claw is very interesting because it's done in the anime, and later on they'll do one in the animated style. I don't know that one was, but they would do one in like the bat. They do a Dark Claw in like it's Batman the animated style.
No.
And it's really cool.
Wow. So anyway, that's kind of your preview of the Amalgam universe. And at the end of this particular story, we go into the fourth issue, which is pretty much Access figures out how to separate the universes again. So Amalgam is no more. And then now they've got to figure out how to get DC and Marvel actually separated also. So we don't have them two universes together where the heroes and villains are all on one Earth. Dude, we didn't even talk about, I mean, well, we kind of mentioned it. We talked about Darkseid versus Thanos, which is kind of that's obviously not a battle that hinged on anything, but it was fun to see in this particular book. Did you have any other thoughts?
I just wish I could have seen more.
Yes.
That's really the thing. Is like, I really would have, what I really wanted out of DC versus Marvel, and we talked about this a little bit before we came on the air. I wish that it had been like a 12-issue maxi series where the DC villains and Marvel villains somehow figured out how to trick the DC and Marvel heroes into fighting. They figure out that it's really these guys. They all go beat up Lex Luthor and Thanos and Doctor Doom and Darkseid or whatever. And yeah. I think that's what most everybody really wanted. And Thanos versus Darkseid just kind of, I like it, but it kind of also, it's bittersweet because it's like, we could have had more. Could have had more of this. This could have been deeper and better. It would have been so awesome to see like the two of those working with, say, like Kang and like Dr. Doom, and then they all get mad at each other and just go at it. That'd be great. That'd be great. And instead, this is just kind of, I don't want this to sound awful or too belittling, but it's just kind of something that happens. And yeah. I think that's bad. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. It just kind of happens. It should be an event, but there was so much going on that I understand how it ended up this way.
Yeah. Okay. Now, was there anything out of this particular book that was missing? Anything that you believe should have been in there other that you haven't already mentioned?
Nothing that I haven't already mentioned. I think the big thing for me, you know, on a personal fan level, God, you gotta have more Punisher. Come on, where's the Punisher? On a bigger level, I think we're done a great disservice by not getting Hawkeye versus Green Lantern.
Green Arrow. Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah, I mean that's one that I think people. Well, you'll still talk about it some, you know, who would win because they never actually got a chance to go at it. I think one of my favorite moments of the book was when Captain Marvel and Thor are about to fight. And there's like, well, I'm Thor, I'm the God of Thunder. And then Captain Marvel's like, well, I got all the powers of these gods. It's like, what should we do? It's like, we'll do what is fitting for those with the powers of gods. We will pray.
Yeah.
It's this nice moment that really showed both characters. And I think that's one of the things that's lacking are those kind of genuine moments. I feel like they forced a lot of stuff. Or it felt forced, like the whole Peter Parker trying to romance Lois Lane subplot and like all this, you know, I mean, some of this stuff, like they were trying to make those moments happen. I wish they had more time for moments like that. Everything felt kind of rushed. If there's anything, I've said it a few times, I wish it was longer so that things could have slowed down. That's the biggest thing. Even if they kept the same story, I just wish things could have slowed down so we could have gotten a little more out of everything. instead of just, you know, a little bit of everything. It's like we went to Baskin Robbins, and instead of getting to make our sundae, all we got was one of those little taste scoops of everything. That's great. I mean, it's not bad to get like 32 fucking spoons of ice cream, but it's not the same thing as having a really good sundae.
Asking myself the same question, if there's anything that I would like to see change, I would almost echo your sentiments. It's got to be longer. There's got to be more that's put in there. It would behoove them to maybe stretch out a few of the battles.
I think sometimes everything happens. Yeah, it happens so fast. You could lose sight of the magnificence of this event and the enormousness of this event. This wasn't just a huge event for like superheroes fighting. I mean, yeah, come on, fuck yeah. I'm into Batman versus Captain America. Don't be a dumbass. But at the same time, this was a huge event for the comic book industry, comic book history, the publishing industry, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, magazines on some level, this was a huge deal for competitors to just come together. I'm not saying it's unprecedented. I know that Marvel and DC have worked together before. I'm sure other large magazines have worked together before, but it's something that didn't happen very often. And it's something that, you know, again, I don't think we'll ever see it again. And I feel like since it was so short, there's not time to pause and reflect and watch things grow. JLA Avengers does a slightly better job of that. Again, too short. 4 issues. Uh-huh. They're all double-sized, but, you know, still just 4 issues.
Yeah.
And, again, it's not like you can get too mad at the creators for that. It's like, why didn't you just make this better because we'll never see this again? They had no idea that we'd never see this again. Now, they might have had a decent idea that it was so unique that it would be hard to duplicate. But at the time, the companies were very cooperative.
Yeah.
Very cooperative. The atmosphere would change considerably when Joe Quesada would take over at Marvel. And that's where a lot of the enmity starts to come. And now it seems impossible. It seems impossible because, you know, of some of the people in charge of each of the in the upper apparatus in each company, but also because it's Disney and Time Warner, and why would they work together?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and no offense to them, I'm not necessarily mad about it. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm a big boy. I can handle not getting some convention toys. I can handle this too.
Well, let's go ahead. I tell you one last question before we get into plugs. Right. Now
that's all I'm here for is the plugs. So. I'm just kidding, man. You got a hell of a show. I'm just kidding.
I appreciate that. We know that it's probably not going to happen in a very long time, but would this have been something that you would have loved to have seen happen like maybe once every decade?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, this is definitely something that in a perfect world would happen like once a decade. We'd update it because like in 96, this was the lineup. If we did it again in 2006, we'd see a completely different lineup of characters because some guys have become hot. Some new characters have been created. Mm-hmm. Some characters had been added, like DC's acquisition of the Wildstorm characters.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And, then some characters like in 1996, the idea that you'd put Deadpool in this thing would have been laughable. In 2006, in 2016, the idea that you wouldn't put Deadpool in would be laughable.
That's a good point, man. Because
now, think about 96, no Harley Quinn. 2016, how do you not have her?
That's right. There's no way.
And who knows what it'll look like in 2026. You know, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think also if you did this every 10 years, you should put a spin on it. I'm a big professional wrestling fan. So if I were them and were able to do this every 10 years, I'd take a lot of cues to update things from professional wrestling. Like, let's say 2006, we just did it the same again because you can do it again. 2016, though, the three-way dance.
Oh!
You know, we're going to have three guys go. We'll have a guy from Marvel versus a guy from DC and then one of their archenemies. And who fucking knows what team that guy will be on? Or we could do tag teams or Survivor Series bouts. I would up the ante. I mean, every so often going back to the just straight up, you know, one versus one, you know, because you have to do the same thing in professional wrestling. But this is something you could do. What if you had a Royal Rumble, you know, type thing, you know, or something? You can do this kind of stuff. And I'm a Mark, and I'm a big superhero Mark. So if you combine those two kingdoms of Markdom, if you will, it would be utter bliss. As it is, it's just not going to happen. But yeah, in a perfect world, this definitely should happen.
Oh,
and maybe
man.
Get other companies involved too. The Valiants, the Images, you know, the IDWs, you know,
Invasion Angle.
Does superheroes, you know, see how big we could get it.
Do an Invasion Angle. dude, I would love to see if Image would have been a part of this. it would just have been unreal. I know that would never, obviously, the likelihood of that ever happening, especially in 96, but Image was off the charts.
It's so complicated because everybody owns their own characters.
That's right. That's right.
You don't just negotiate with Image. You'd have to negotiate with like 7 to 10 different people.
Every fucking person. Yeah. My man, Dean Compton, thank you very much for coming on here. I had a blast talking to you about this. I love talking 90s comics. A lot of my listeners know that, but I think you are the only one that really gets me. All right.
You hear that, people? I'm better than you.
So let's go ahead. We'll get into plugs, dude. Thanks again for coming on here. What do you got to plug, dude?
You know, it's always a pleasure, never a chore, to come over here on Source Material and hang out with you for a little bit. Anytime you want me, you know I'm here. And you do a great show yourself, so don't sell yourself short. We got a lot of great stuff going on. We do a podcast. That's the we is Emily Scott and I. We do a podcast every Thursday night at midnight Eastern. That's Thursday night going into Friday, midnight Eastern on VOC Nation. It's called Her Dork World, His Dork World. And here in the next, I guess it's about a month out, we'll be covering Dragon Con down here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we'll be doing a live show from Dragon Con. We'll probably be doing some Facebook Live stuff. So keep an eye on that. Lots of great cosplay. There'll be lots of great interviews. Obviously, I am the 90s comics guy. I run the only 90s comics exclusive website on the internet. That is theunspokendecade.com. Theunspokendecade.com. You got to put the article in front of it, folks. We got lots of great articles. We just published one. One of my writers published one on Triumph, the character that came out of Zero Hour into the Justice League mythos. I've got a great podcast coming up here in the next week or so on the return of Barry Allen in the 90s. So basically, you know, check us out on Facebook. Just, you know, go to Facebook, type in The Unspoken Decade, type in Her Dork World, His Dork World. And we're happy to have new viewers and listeners. And I'm easy to find on Twitter. I'm at The Anti-Fascist. You want to follow the show? At HDW, HDW Radio, and The Unspoken Decade is at Unspoken Decade. And I'm Dean Compton on Facebook. You're welcome to friend request me, but like Jesse done told you, you're not as good as me, so I don't know why I would accept it. No, but for real, I'm always looking for more comic book fans, more wrestling fans to talk to.
And there you have it, folks. 20 years ago, DC versus Marvel came and went, and we have yet to see anything like it since. I hope you all have enjoyed the show, and I want to give a huge thanks to Dean Compton for coming on and talking with me. Always an absolute great time discussing things with him, and I look forward to having him back on sometime in the near future. Alright, so what's coming up for Source Material? At some point here, we will be celebrating the release of Suicide Squad in the theaters by covering a Harley Quinn book at the beginning of August. Now, shortly after that, I have the power! Source Material will be having a roundtable discussion in regards to the He-Man comics that came out in the 80s, the ones with the figures, and you guys do not want to miss that one. So till then, faithful listeners, have a good one!